Welcome to the Wealth Conversation podcast. This podcast is for you if you believe that wealth is so much more than just money. At the Wealth Conversation, we believe that wealth encompasses our physical, spiritual, mental, social, and financial well-being. I'm your host, Tsitsi Mutiti, and I will be having conversations with financial experts and people just like you and me who are on the journey to building lasting generational wealth. If this resonates with you, then I encourage you to hit the subscribe button so you get notifications of when our next episode will go live. For now, let's get into this week's conversation. Welcome to the Wealth Conversation podcast. For this episode, I am super, super excited to have the wonderful Teresha Young. I'll be having a conversation with her about how we can build wealth in relationships. Teresha is a multi-award-winning, accredited and certified international wellness and relationship coach. And she has over 20 years experience. She specializes in enabling individuals to build better relationships, something I need to work on, better relationships with themselves, yes. And leading to radical transformations in their well-being. Teresha.
Hello.
Welcome to the Wealth Conversation podcast.
Thank you so much for having me today. It's such an honor and privilege to be having a conversation with you.
Amazing. I'm sort of thinking honor and privilege. I'm feeling the same way because we met many, many years ago. Yes. It was before the pandemic when we were kind of starting out in with our visions of what we wanted to help people with. And yeah, I feel like we've come full circle.
We have.
And so excited to have this conversation. I've got my pen ready to take notes.
I do deliver quite a lot of information, so be prepared to take notes and key takeaways.
Yes, fantastic. So let's start with the big idea of this conversation. What does building money through love mean to you, and how do you see it in the world?
Yeah, building money through love. There's that saying, isn't there? That you're not meant to love money. You know, money is the root of all evil. Or yeah. The love of money is a bad thing. But I wouldn't necessarily say that the love of money is a bad thing. You have to think about what money can do for you, what it can bring. Okay, money is a tool. It is a tool. And it's something that can feel like a bit of a stressor for lots of people.
Yep.
But when you can actually really tap into what that brings for you, the sense of security. So for me, money brings for me a sense of security, freedom, experiences, what I can do for other people as well, what I can do for my daughter, what I can do for my family, how I can serve and donate to charities. So for me, being aligned with what it means to me and my values is so important. And when you can build into that and you can nurture that love for what it does, so not necessarily the actual medium of it, but what it can do for you, how it can feel, how it can serve, that's what motivates me to build wealth. And this is what I encourage in other people as well, particularly in a relationship, is to, you know, how can you just think about what it can do for you and how it make you feel the opportunities that can come your way for it.
I absolutely love that. One of the things I take my coaching clients through is, you know, first of all, getting clear on where they are and then where they want to be when it comes to their money journey. But then we also start looking at their values. What are your values? Yes. And how are you using money? Is it in accordance with your values? And, you know, as your work does, you're getting people to understand themselves first.
Yes.
Build a relationship with themselves, and then they can start building relationships with other people.
Yes.
Before we move forward,
yes.
I'd love for you to just tell the listeners a bit more about what you do,
yeah.
And then we can delve a bit deeper into this topic of building money through wealth, through love, sorry.
So what it is, I mean, thank you for the introduction, because I think you pretty much nailed there in terms of what I do in terms of enabling individuals to build a better relationship with themselves so that they can have better relationships with other people, so that they can improve their well-being, their effectiveness in both their personal and professional lives. And then also how they can nurture the relationships with other people as well. So a lot of what I do, of course, I've got the professional angle. I'm a coach. I'm an international wellness and relationship coach. And I'm very grateful to have recently won a number of awards for the work that I do. And I'm also able to speak on the BBC as their relationship expert. So yes, I do that. But why did I start doing this work? And I think it's really important to share that with the listeners, because it was a lot of my lived experiences that made me focus on building that relationship with myself. So let's talk about my parents' dynamics. So for example, I was brought up in a home. My mother, my father were together, but it was a bit of a dysfunctional relationship. And I was the eldest of four children. And what I did see there was a lot of tension. I had a father who was extremely abusive towards my mother, mentally, physically, emotionally. And as the eldest of four children, we witnessed this. I mean, I witnessed the struggle, but also I had that nurturing, caring aspect. Now, for my siblings too, there was a lot of financial difficulties between my parents too, in terms of the income that was coming in, you know, red letters building up, not being opened up. When, what was that saying to me? Run away from money. You know, money is a problem. We don't have enough money. Scarce mentality, all kicking in. Debt collectors knocking at the door, hiding. Don't be good, be quiet, okay? Those kind of things, and they can really start to create some limiting beliefs. So, you know, witnessing the dynamics of my parents as well, and it got to the point where 30 years later, my mother said, my dad's not going to change, you know, as a person. And he was, and I speak very openly about this, so it's not like this is going to be a shock for this episode, or my mum and dad are going to say, oh, don't talk about it. But I talk very openly about it because it's part of my journey, and I know that. And it did get to the point where my dad was going not going to change. He was having numerous affairs, was in and out of prison, was addicted to drugs and alcohol. So 30 years later, my mum said, that's it. She said, you're not going to change, so I need to do something about it. So she brought the marriage to an end. And I really admire her courage to do that, to become, in effect, a bit of a single mother, even though she kind of was raising us alone. Anyway, my dad had a presence, but wasn't necessarily there to be caring for us. But she stood in her power and she left. And that gave me a lot of insight about relationships. But that did transition into my relationships too. So when I met my first love, so to speak, at the age of 19, I thought that he was the forever person for me. Of course, it's going to be like my mum and dad, that one person. It didn't work out that way. After 5 years of being together, I got a text message from him saying how he doesn't want to be in a relationship anymore.
Wow.
I was blindsided. I had no idea. We were young. You know, we just had little tiffs and so forth, but we were saving up for a mortgage, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I thought that we were committed.
Yes.
And to get this message out of the blue saying that I don't want to be with you by text message after 5 years, I was devastated. My heart was broken, absolutely broken. And I never had experienced heartbreak like it. I remember receiving the news and I was clawing at the carpet, just like trying to get some sort of groundedness in me. But there was no coming back from that. He just was not interested. He had moved on. No real excuse. It just wasn't working out. But what that did, it started to perpetuate some of the limiting beliefs that I had, generalizations about men. All men are the same. All of my limiting beliefs about not being worthy or accepted at school, and you know, all of those kind of things that were showing up for me. And I felt that I wasn't accepted. I just didn't have a click, really. I think because of everything that was happening at home, I just couldn't gel with the mindset of the people at school. I felt very mature. And so it got to the point, though, about a year and a half later, that I was like a swan. I was gliding on the water, but no one knew that underneath that water, I was pedaling. I was pedaling. But it really got to the point where I just didn't want to be here anymore, Sitsi. I really didn't. So in December 2009, I took an impulsive overdose and I said bye to the world. But I woke up. I woke up and I knew in that moment that I was here to serve a greater purpose and I needed to do some work on myself. I needed to heal. I needed to actually deal with some of the feelings and emotions that were coming up for me. So I went to my doctor and I explained what had happened. I was offered antidepressants or CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right.
For me, I'm more about mindset. I wanted to not rely upon medication. So I did CBT. And from that moment, when I started to witness my thoughts and how it affects my feelings and my emotions, and that triggers my behaviors and the results that I get in my life, it's an acronym that I use, T-E-A-R. Thoughts affect your emotions, that affects your actions and your results, T-E-A-R. Like a tear.
Yeah.
I started to heal. The quality of the relationship with myself was just transformed. And then I said to myself, who else doesn't know about this? So I studied. I went and started doing some more mindset work. I got qualifications in counseling. I got qualifications in coaching. I'm a master coach, accredited master coach. I also did various different things. I said NLP, did some TBT. And I said, I'm going to share this with the world because if it can work for me, it can work for other people too.
Indeed.
So for me, I had to build a relationship with myself in order to receive the outcomes and results. And this is why I do what I do. Because the quality of the relationships you have with other people depends upon the quality of the relationship you have with yourself.
That is so true and phenomenal. And thank you so much for sharing your story. I know that there are a lot of people who go through trials and tribulations or, you know, as you say, get blindsided by individuals or maybe, you know, as we're talking today about wealth, you know, their financial situation and they think the only way out is to take drastic measures.
Absolutely.
But your story really illustrates that there is another way. And actually, sometimes we get so caught up in what's going on in the world and with other people and what other people mean to us, we forget about ourselves. And we are truly, truly the strongest people we know,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in terms of relationships, it's interesting because you started with your parents' relationship and you did mention that there were issues around money, debt, the red letters coming through the door. I'm sure there are people listening to this conversation, watching us on YouTube, who may have experienced that in the past or are going through it now. What would you say are the important things for people in relationships to start off with when it comes to dealing with money? Because for me now, I feel it's so easy for me to say, have a conversation, sit down, etc. Because I've actually been through that journey where I was getting, you know, the overdue on your payments. But at that point in time, I was on my own. And from what you've said and from what I know, that period in time has created certain mindsets, certain scripts in my brain about when things aren't working out with money. And, you know, I catch myself sometimes because I think, oh, that's from that time. But not everyone has done a bit of the work or some work. And you go through that scenario and then you enter a relationship. So what should we be thinking about? What should we be working on?
Well, you've nailed it. We have to do that work by ourselves first. Because in order to have a quality relationship with your partner, you will need to identify what is showing up for you in relation to money. What fears are showing up for you? When you just put the word money on a piece of paper, for example, and I very much encourage my clients to journal about their thoughts, their feelings, and their emotions. But just put the word money on a piece of paper and then do the pros and cons. I like to also do like a SWOT analysis. Know what are the strengths of having money? What are the weaknesses of having money? What are the opportunities of having money? What's the threats around having money? Dissect it into four segments. Then you can start to witness your own personal feeling about it. Because when you are able to witness your thoughts and your feelings around it, then you'll be able to communicate to your partner, this is what's showing up for me. Then your partner will be able to understand a bit more because we, if we don't have that sense of clarity, we can struggle to communicate it well. And when we struggle to communicate, then our partner doesn't have an understanding about what that means. You may have completely different upbringings, childhood upbringings and experiences, past experiences. Your partner could have come from a more affluent situation. So they haven't experienced the struggles. They haven't experienced the worries and everything that you've witnessed. Whereas you might have the habit of only saving for rainy days. I'm going to save. But your partner is a bit more frivolous with their spending and says, let's go to Dubai. And you're like, no. Yeah. We're not going to Dubai. Thank you very much. We're saving for the rainy day that we get so many of in the UK. So yes. We're not going anywhere, anytime.
Yeah.
So I would really strongly invite people to do that work first with themselves, to be able to understand the emotional triggers that come from the money. Then you'll be able to say, so what's a more empowering way to think about it? I've highlighted the weaknesses, but I've now also highlighted the strengths. How can I feel more into that energy of the strengths and the opportunities? We are wired. We have the negativity bias. We are wired to look for risk. That's just because that's how we're wired biologically, to look for risk.
Yes.
So therefore, we have to train our brain to be able to look for the opportunities and the strengths and then go small, go like slowly with it. As well, don't go all guns blazing. That's it. I'm going to go out and get myself a new car now. I'm going to donate, you know, £1,000 to charity. If you want to start donating, maybe start small to start to build up that habit of doing it.
I love that. It's really about being committed,
yes,
and consistent, doing things consistently, and after a while, it becomes automatic. I'm thinking about myself and my relationship with my husband. And when we got together, it was definitely each man for himself. You know, we'd meet up, go on dates and whatever, maybe split the bill. Yeah. Sometimes he'd feel like, you know, he needs to show me that he can look after me. So he'd pay for the, of course, you know, we like that. Yes.
I forgot my purse.
Say no. Yeah. Exactly. But interestingly, when we got engaged, at the time I was looking for a property, and then it became, okay, so I'm going to be living with this person permanently. We're going to get married, so we'll need to look for a property together. Yes. And that was a very interesting journey for me because I am the sort of, I can't find the right word, and maybe you can help me with that because I think the words I have are based on old scripts in my brain. Yeah. But I like the bigger stuff. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because my parents died when I was very young. Like you, I'm the eldest of four. Mm. So I became the head of the family unit. Mm. So when I think about things that I'm doing for myself, I'm also considering them in a way.
Yes.
So for me, it was important to have a house where people could come in. If they needed to stay, they could stay.
Yes.
They'd have a room. But there was also one small thing, which I laugh about now, but the fact that I didn't want to have to wake up in the middle of the night to go to the toilet and then there's somebody else there. So I needed multiple toilets.
Or at least an en suite
in my room.
Yes.
So that was kind of, you know, the foundation of it all. He, on the other hand, was very happy to be like, you know, let's just go for a 3-bedroom house. Yeah. It's because he looks at the cost, the outlay. I'm more about what can I get first, and then I'll work out the cost.
Yeah. Now, what you're referring to there is very traditional roles when it comes to how the man can often be seen as the provider in a traditional role, and they are more logical, more fact-based, more about rationality and practicalities when it comes to a home. Whereas women in the traditional role tend to be more of a nurturer. As you said there, you were thinking about the bigger picture. You know, how can you host people? How can you care for people in your home? So women tend to have a bit more of the relational and emotional side when it comes to the home, and a sense and feel into what that can do for other people as well. So it's not like that's not typical of what you are seeing at all. I just think it just lends very nicely into what traditional roles have been. Now, particularly as you said, and about you, that's kind of like stepping into that role of caring for your siblings as well. So again, is that whole emotional side to it? Okay, you got the whole toilet thing going on
exactly.
too.
See, That was very practical.
That was a practical one. Exactly. But then also, you just think about the bigger thing. Like, you don't want to be inconvenienced. Mm. And, you know, and again, that's really lends to just the bigger picture. So that's not to say that men typically don't see a home as a home. They might see it more like a house or an apartment, like really functional. Whereas women see the home for what it can do and how it can make them feel within that home. But things are very much, you know, changing in society, I would say, now, particularly as women become more in their professional roles, as they start to have more authority and presence and impact in their roles. What you are finding is that many women, and I talk about masculine and feminine energy.
Right.
And for people, we're not talking about women becoming more men or man-like or men becoming more women-like. This is all about the energy that you bring. And a lot of women are stepping more into a masculine energy. Now, when it comes to their profession, they are getting higher up in the ranks, highly achieving women. And what that tends to mean is that you get to be more visionary, mm-hmm. more logical in mm-hmm. your mind. And that can transition into the home as well. So sometimes you'll find that where it's becoming more of a strengths-based dynamic in the home, particularly when it comes to things like finances too. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not about gender roles. It's more about skill set. Because you may find that the woman is actually better at budgeting than the man. The woman might actually be better at spending in certain ways or saving, which is why it's so important that couples have conversations. I call them money dates, so to speak.
Yeah, I call them that as well.
You call them money dates. Ooh, okay, we're in alignment. Yes. Nice money date. Make it fun too.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
You sit down and be like, oh gosh, another review. But simply it's a case of reviewing. It is, because things change. You know, the money situation might change, but then also your feeling around money might change. Yeah. Other things in your life can impact on the way that you feel about your finances too. So a well-being check, you know, check in, have a money date. How are we doing? Celebrate wins. Even if you saved £20 that month, it's like celebrate. And so have money dates to be able to actually assess what skill sets are changing too and what that might look like for people. Because, we are kind of veering a bit more away from traditional roles and a bit more into like a skill set, strength-based approach.
Yeah, I love that you've mentioned the traditional roles and how that's shifting, because I am starting to see it. However, there are certain instances where I've seen the roles have shifted, where it's the woman who's taking care of the finances more. Yes. And I think women are generally good at budgeting because we tend to be the ones who budget for the house. Yes. But when it comes to the bigger stuff, say investments or making a big financial decision, I've seen those very women sort of pull back.
Yes. Which is why if you can build your financial wealth as a couple by actually doing it together, educating yourself together, because sometimes it can seem so overwhelming and so complicated. Investments, savings, what does that even look like? Stocks, shares. Sometimes we can just by default hand it over to the man because we think that's your area to do. But in actual fact, if couples can start to learn together, so maybe take a financial literacy course together, that way you've got shared knowledge and then you've got shared language. If somebody understands something a bit more, then you can educate each other on it. And I think, you know, some of the key questions, and we need to be having these money conversations, not just when you are in a solid relationship, but from the start.
Indeed.
Yeah, you have to, because so many people avoid it, even in the dating stage. And then further down the line, they find out that this person's spending habits are a certain way, or they don't prioritize saving and investments. But somebody's like, I was brought up and I save. This person is really generous with their money. It makes me feel uneasy. So have these conversations early on. Ask that person, how do you prioritize spending, saving and investments? You know, what's your feelings around financial stability? What does financial wealth mean to you?
Yeah.
And you can even be really direct. Obviously, probably not one for the first date though. but no, how do you earn income? We need to sometimes just get straight to it, because this is where there can be a lot of hidden debt. Secret spending starts to happen. So be, and what's your values? As we spoke about values, now what's your values around money too? Have these conversations very early on, because then you will normalize the conversation.
Yeah.
So if and when that relationship develops into something more solid, you're doing this regularly. It's just like, we just talk. This is just like how we talk. And what do you want for dinner?
Yeah.
It's kind of like, how's the money situation going on? It's just such a normal, comfortable, safe conversation to have.
So the money conversation should be a priority like all other conversations.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it makes people feel so awkward.
It does.
But if it makes you feel awkward, we need to understand why, what is causing you to feel awkward about having those money situations and conversations. Now, is it because you have some limiting beliefs that you need to work on and understand more about and change them into something more empowering? Or is it maybe a past experience where you've actually spoken about money to somebody or to a previous or ex-partner and there was some backlash behind it, or it didn't go down very well? And it's actually rewriting that script. I know you use the word script, is rewriting that script to say, okay, just because that happened before doesn't mean it's going to happen again. So we need to understand what is causing the awkwardness. For some people, they think, it just feels like I'm being nosy, really.
Mm.
Now, if you're going to build a solid, serious, committed relationship with somebody, knowing about financial health and wealth is important, because the deceit or infidelity around finances can cause a lot of problems. And having those conversations early on will help you to assess compatibility in many areas, especially lifestyle, habits. And if it's not compatible, it also gives you an opportunity to say, I'm not quite sure how this is going to work out. And then we are empowered to then say, well, we might not be the most compatible people if we cannot come to some sort of cooperation or understanding or agreement about how this is going to look for us going forward.
Yeah, I completely agree. Mm. With the work that I do, I can tell a lot about someone from their bank statement, the type of investments they have, if they're doing the investing themselves.
Yeah.
And so, as you say, having that conversation is really important because it just gives you an insight into the individual. But what I've found in my own personal experience, when I had my first deep conversation with my now husband about money, it uncovered stuff that he had gone through, you know, messages that he had been told, you know, where, you know, I was getting frustrated because I had taken on the role as the person who is looking after the money. But in my head, I wanted to be that damsel in distress.
Yes.
You know, when someone just says, what do you want? What do you need? Here you go.
Take it. I've got it covered.
Exactly. Covered. You want, you know, so I felt like, why am I the one who's always, you know, but it's something that I had carried with me for a long time. And that stemmed from my experience of ending up being the head of the household by default, because my parents had passed away. So I found myself giving money when people needed it, you know, because if my sisters needed something, I was, they'd come to me. So I was now doing that, you know, more widely to the point where my husband had to say to me, stop paying for the bill when we go out. In terms of, if we went out in a group, I'd be the one who'd be like, I'll pay, you can send me the money. And then I'm chasing people for the money.
It's an extra stressor.
Because I just want convenience. And actually, we laughed about the toilet thing, but you've just made me realize that it was all about convenience. I hate sitting at a restaurant and that card machine is going round 10 times.
Yes.
It just, it frustrated me. But actually, you know, I was taking an opportunity away from other people to just do what they wanted to do, manage their money in their way. I was saying, no, don't worry, I'll pay. Yeah. And he would say to me before we entered the restaurant, do not.
Yeah. I like that heads
take
up.
Take that on.
Do you know, when you're talking there, and not to say this was your personal situation, but this is what I do see when I work with my clients and in the industry that I do, is that there's also that element of control.
Yeah.
Because when we feel that we are in control, then we can fix things. You know, we've got it covered. So for example, not to say this is your personal experience, but to be able to control that situation where you're going out paying a bill, it might seem like it's just convenient to do, but in actual fact, you've managed to control that situation in that moment. So understanding a bit more about why we necessarily feel that we have to be the person to take control, to control the finances. What is that doing for us? Does it mean that it means that we take full responsibility for it? We can be accountable for it. It just saves having to chase people if we can control it. So then again, it kind of feeds into the fixer tendency that sometimes people can have to fix situation and control. So I think what's really important is to be able to say, are my actions coming out of fear, which could possibly be control, or is it coming out of genuine love? Because when you can actually differentiate between I'm doing this out of love and it's a different kind of energy as opposed to I'm doing it out of fear, control, then you'd be able to understand, okay, I need to just maybe switch up my behavior a little bit. And maybe as your husband said, you know, don't pay the bill. Ooh, but how did that make you feel? Actually, that's a question to you. When he said to you to stop paying the bill, how did that make you feel?
Oh my goodness, I'm already shivering inside.
What did I bring up for you?
It's just, first of all, I will say everything you have said is me. I have been called a fixer. I need to be in control, or have needed to be in control. Mm. I'm more relaxed now. Mm. And it's because of the relationship I'm in, because he is so relaxed. He is sort of like very spontaneous. And we used to have arguments because he'd wake up in the morning and be like, oh, let's go for a drive here, or let's go for lunch here. And I'm saying, no.
It's not my schedule.
It's not exactly. We need to plan things. So absolutely, the paying the bill stuff was out of control. Yeah. I would even go as far as to say it made me feel a certain sense of power, you know, and I understand that because of the work that I have done on myself. It's still work in progress, but I did realize that you need to feel a sense of power. I needed to feel that people listened to me, you know, a sense of authority. Yes. I had people who'd call me the fixer. If you need anything done, if there's a problem, call Tsitsi, she'll fix it. And for real, I would fix it. Yeah. Most of the time it would be like, okay, how much money do you need for it? And then I give them a, that fixer characteristic and the, sort of came out as giving, but some of it was genuine out of love. But, you know, looking back, there was definitely some that was really about controlling individuals, feeling a bit powerful, but also feeling a sense of safety, because if I sort it out, then there's no risk of anything else going wrong.
Absolutely. And we have to acknowledge where that has come from. Mm. The fact that you stepped into that leadership role in your family. Mm. So of course, that will then just transition into the other aspects of how you do things. So again, it's part of that awareness. You've done the work to understand. It's a journey. I always say, you know, this is a journey when it comes to life, not necessarily a destination, because we are evolving as people. We're growing as people. The world is changing.
It is.
We're changing. So it's definitely a case of actually understanding what the root cause was of that, but it's identifying it. And what I love there is that you said that your husband held that space for you and he shared with you very vulnerably, you know, his views around money and his patterns and his scripts too. And that is what can actually start to really nurture a healthy relationship, is when both couples can witness the journey of it, understand what that means. So you have a bit more of an understanding about, you know, his views, and then he'll be like, oh, I understand your views. Okay, so how can we work together on that in order to identify the emotional triggers that may be showing up? And then take it gently. It's all about creating that safety, that emotional safety in a relationship, to be able to talk very openly and very vulnerably about it as well. And celebrate the fact that you have identified something as well. Yeah. Don't maybe beat the other person up for it, you know? Or it's like, you should not be thinking that way at all. Okay, no, forget that. No, change your way. No, limiting beliefs stem back. You've been carrying this belief. You've got all of the stacks of evidence backing up that belief. Mm. So to actually rewire that belief, you're going to have to build up a whole another stack of evidence to actually believe something else, something true, a new truth for you. And it takes work, but you can make it fun. You know, whatever we do in terms of self-exploration, it is a case of, how can we make that a place when we come from curiosity. We see it as an experiment. Mm. Just because you have committed to something, it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to stay there. It might not work. Try something else as well. Give yourself some grace and some compassion along the journey too. It's so important to do that.
I love that. Mm. So for people who are in relationships and haven't had the experiences that have maybe caused them to sit down and talk about their money relationship, their individual money relationship, and then maybe explore how they can start coming together through love to build the wealth. What are some of the steps they should be taking or considering to get closer to that point where they're working together and, you know, everything is sort of like there's a rhythm, there's a system to it. Because money is emotional, whether you're in a relationship or not. Mm. And actually, I would like to maybe broaden out the question to be more about, yes, we've got couples, but there are other relationships that we have, like, for example, with siblings. Mm. I work with my siblings a lot when it comes to finances in terms of if there's family that we want to support, etc. So that's a relationship in itself, but we all have different values and thoughts and experience around money. You know, and you've mentioned parents as well.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Great question. If I can maybe do two parts to that question. So the first one, you use the word system, create a system.
Okay.
Absolutely create a system. If this is new to you as a couple, then create a habit and a system. These money dates, make it a non-negotiable. Put it in your diary. I don't want to see no tentatives. It is.
Yeah.
No tentatives. Okay, yes. You accept the date. Yeah. So that could be regular, could be once a month, for example. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't necessarily have to do this a weekly thing. Whatever feels like a nice, gentle step, ease yourself into it. Maybe once a month, you'll sit down and you review it. So firstly, put some time in to have a money date and conversation around that. Then also get some clarity, because you might have your own separate account. You might have a joint bank account, whatever that means. So, you know, create something like a spreadsheet. You know, I'm using a very old term, spreadsheet, whatever system that you need
works
for you. In order to know what your incomings are, what your outgoings are as an individual and also as a couple. You know, start to get some systems and process, some clarities. I think clarity is so important, because then you can be transparent with that person. Then shared values. I think if you can work out what your core values are as a person, and values are what is important to you in life, and your partner can, then you can see how you can have some shared values around money too. So money might bring you security. It might not bring security for another person. So what else does it do for you that is shared? Because it's that shared value, that core value, that's really going to connect you to building wealth, so that you have the same intention behind what that can be. Also, look at your goals. What are your money goals? You know, what are your short-term, medium, long-term goals when it comes to money? Do you want to maybe purchase a home? Now, do you want to go on holiday? Do you want to invest in your children's education? Now, what are your goals right now? What does that look like? Maybe you even want to go out on a regular date to a restaurant. Just actually get some clarity on what your goals are. Short-term, medium, long-term goals. So I'll say that's the first thing. I mean, I don't want to overwhelm people with lots of information, but those are some first steps. It's actually just to sit down and kind of like values, goals, some clarity on your outgoings and your expenditures and your incomings. Then make sure that you look at it on a very regular basis. The second part is when you spoke about family, for example, and we can be in a situation with friends and family where we can ask, we can either be the borrower or we can be the lender, I suppose. And it can get to a point where we may feel like, I do, you know, have the money to lend somebody, and we have to understand whether that's going to be as a gift or if there's an expectation that person is going to, you know, give it back to you. So you as personally have to understand how you are lending the money. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get the money back, are you going to be good with it? Okay.
Yeah.
So it's all about a conversation. If you find that there are certain family members or friends who are coming to you regularly for money, it's note the observation, really. And you can say, I've noticed that you have been coming to me quite regularly for money, and sometimes the quantity could be X, Y, and Z, whatever it is. And then say how it makes you feel, because you're going to have a conversation with them if you are concerned about them or it's something that's impacting on you,
yeah.
then you state no. And that makes me feel whatever that makes it feel for you. And then you can say, you know, what's important to you? What's the need? What I would prefer? What's your preferences there? This is where you get to set a boundary around it. And then you open it up to conversation to get their points of view. It's actually a technique called nonviolent communication, what I have laid out there. Some people call it more compassionate communication. Mm-hmm. But it's important when we are having the, it's all about communication and the way that we communicate it to our partner as well. When we talk about how I feel, use I statements. It's really important because rather than you make me feel a certain way, nobody makes you feel a certain way. We have to own it. They might have a behavior or do something that you don't like, but we are in control of our feelings.
Right.
So it's a case of you note the observation. I've noticed that. And when that happens, I feel you've owned the emotion. You've owned the feeling. So I would say that it's important just to have open, honest, what I call it HOT, H-O-T conversations. Honest, open, transparent conversations.
Love that.
Hot conversations.
Hot, yeah.
Hot conversation. in whatever aspect that can be, you know, whether it's a difficult time that you're going through with a loved one or whether it is actually just generally. If we can get ourselves into a habit of just having hot conversations, it will normalize these conversations and the situations that we are going through. So I'm not sure if that answered your question, but
I hope it did. That did. Honest, open and transparent conversations.
Yes.
So important. And I think we underestimate how much just having a conversation, even if it's a 2-5 minute conversation, just starting that off can, it creates a domino effect over time.
Yeah.
So I am a great advocate of having the conversations. You in answering that question, you highlighted, and I've also highlighted as well in this conversation, times when there's been financial stress.
Yes.
And I mean, you started that off with when you were talking about your parents.
Yeah.
How have you seen financial stress show up in relationships?
Yeah. Mostly withdrawal. I think because we haven't normalized, many people have tended to not normalize open, honest and transparent conversations.
Mm-hmm.
There's a withdrawal. You will see that the person goes quiet.
Okay.
And they're not actually being transparent about why they're quiet at all. I've seen that in my parents' relationship when they were together. My mum would withdraw, she'll go quiet. And my dad was oblivious to it. You know, he's very logical, you know, my dad's from Jamaica. So he pretty much just kept going and, you know, me run things not on me.
Mm-hmm. I love that.
kind of situation.
Yeah,
so he's just oblivious and I live in his and they can come find me kind of situation. But my mum went quiet because she realised the impact. So what I do see in relationships is that there is that withdrawal. Somebody will tend to go quiet. Now, either the partner is either oblivious to it or they notice it, but they are fearful of addressing it. Of actually saying, I've noticed that you've gone a bit quiet, because they know that there's a deeper problem.
Mm.
So it's really important in those situations is when you notice a difference in your partner's behavior, you call it out with love and compassion. I've noticed that you've gone quiet. And you have to be able to receive whatever they say to you, because you probably don't even want to hear, yeah, I have gone quiet because you're not bringing in enough money.
Mm.
I have gone quiet because you didn't pay that bill. I have gone quiet. So they might actually not even articulate themselves in a way that's going to be received very well. But for you to hold that space and say, I hear what you're saying. Repeat back to them, I hear what you said. You are upset with me because I have not paid the bill. You are upset with me. Feed it back to them in their language so that they say, I have been heard. I have been acknowledged. And you have listen to me, what's the next step from that? So typically withdrawal is what I see. There might even be some passive aggressive behavior that comes out of it. And you know, people are throwing things around the kitchen and, you know, doing things that they shouldn't be doing, slamming doors.
Yeah.
So it can be more of a passive aggressive behavior that comes up. But fundamentally, what you will start to see generally is an emotional disconnect. You start to have that emotional disconnect from somebody because you feel that you can't trust them. I cannot trust you with my finances. I cannot trust you with the income in the home. I'm stressed at the moment and I feel unsafe. And when I feel unsafe, that means I can't trust you.
Yeah.
But people aren't mind readers. And it's having that conversation to say, okay, I feel unsafe right now. Start to label our emotions. We can have a tendency just to stick to three core emotions: happy, sad, angry. How do you feel? I feel happy. How do you feel? I feel sad. How do you feel? Angry. There's layers to emotions. Mm. And I'd really invite people to go online and look at a wheel of emotion. That's what it's called, a wheel of emotions.
Yeah.
And basically what it does, it starts to pinpoint emotions very accurately and clearly. So therefore you can say, I actually don't feel angry. I'm not an angry person. I feel disappointed. I feel frustrated.
Mm.
I feel lonely, actually. I'm with a partner, but even though that person's present physically, I still feel emotionally lonely. So you can really start to pinpoint and then you can express it to somebody. People connect by feelings and emotions. So when you can actually say, you know what, I feel disconnected from you, or I feel lonely, I feel frustrated, I feel disappointed. Then you can start to see patterns. You can start to see patterns in your emotions. So each time that person's done this, each time that person doesn't pay a bill, each time the income's dropped, I do feel disappointed.
Mm.
Okay, so let me communicate that. And I felt, you know, disappointed on this occasion because people like to know, you know, when I've disappointed you. There's no point saying I've disappointed you. Tell me when. People want proof.
Yes,
people want
yes.
evidence. Give me the receipts.
Yes.
And I'm like, people want the receipts. So it's, yes, if you can, and this is not about scorekeeping.
Mm.
This is not about tick for tack. This is just for you to be able to communicate. I have felt this on a number of occasions and I really ought to express to you because it's stifling me. And when I feel stifled, I don't communicate well, I withdraw, or I do behaviours that aren't helpful for the relationship. So I would say it's really key to really start to label our emotions, identify what those emotions look like, and understand when you are feeling stress, because there is a technique that can be used between partners as well to start to co-regulate
mm-hmm.
With each other. I'm very much into regulating the nervous system. When we're feeling unsafe and we're feeling stressed, it's because your nervous system's out of whack.
Wow.
You know, it's like, don't know what to do.
Yes.
Really. And this is where regulating our nervous system is critical, to bring it back to the body, because we are often up in the mind.
Yes.
There's that mind-body connection that we have, and body-mind, it goes both ways. So sometimes we just need to get out of our head and just bring it back to the body. So it's about, I have a technique that I would encourage, you know, people, if you want me to share it.
I was about to ask,
yeah.
How do you co-regulate? Because obviously there's what you're feeling
yeah.
based on, and that's a response to whatever has happened around you, whether it's your partner hasn't paid the bill
yeah.
or they've bought you something amazing.
Yes. I don't want it. That's not my love surprise. Language.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. There are all those external factors. But as you said, we control how we react to those things.
Yes.
But then if I'm more on the, you know, at this point in time, because of this situation, I'm feeling a bit calm, but this person is anxious, nervous.
Yeah.
How do we do that co-regulating? How does that work?
And you think, you know, how can you co-regulate your nervous system? Think of it like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
You would hold a baby close to your chest.
Mm-hmm.
The baby falls into the parent's breathing. And you regulate with that child. And it's one of the first things you get told, actually, when you have a kid.
Yeah.
It's about soothing that baby. Put the baby on your chest to chest,
mm-hmm.
they would say,
mm-hmm.
for the man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, instantly, I remember when I had my daughter and she was put on her father's chest, you know, order to start the co-regulation there. Same right. with me as a mummy. So now, I'm not saying that you go chest to chest with your partner. This is going to be a different kind of yes. co-regulation. So what I would invite you to do, if you, both people could be feeling stressed, or it could be one person, as you have said. So what I would invite people to do is to take a moment just to sit down in front of each other and to hold hands, palm to palm. Or you can put your palm on the knees.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, you just want to ground in it. And you just sit there for a moment and you just look at each other. Or you can close your eyes, whatever feels comfortable for you. And you start to focus on your own breath. Some inhales, some exhales. Then you look at your partner and you see if you can time the rhythm. So you both are exhaling and you both are inhaling at the same time. So you just do that for a few minutes. And when you are in rhythm, then you visualize. You visualize on each exhale, the stress leaving your body. And then with the inhale, imagine calm coming in. And you just do that for a few minutes. And you just breathe, and you just breathe, and you just be so grounded in the present moment. And then you share a moment of gratitude with each other. Once you have regulated yourself and you're deeply breathing, and it could be something positive about your partner, it could be something that you appreciate your partner, to say, I am so grateful that we are building wealth as a team. I am so grateful to be on this journey with you, and we can do this together. And you just feel into that. Now you may decide that you don't have no more money discussions, that's it. Or you may go back into the discussion that you're about to have, because now you've regulated and you had some time to ground yourself, and you may be able to see that with a whole new approach and some clarity. But that is a way that you can synchronize your breathing with each other in order to tackle any sort of stresses that may be showing up for you when it comes to money. But then also that technique, you can use it across the board, really. Like, I'm talking about wealth here and finances, but equally, if you just want to ground with each other and be in the present moment, your partner could be having a difficult time at work, could be having some family related issues. If you just want to be present with your partner and ground together, you can use that there too.
I absolutely love that. Thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Okay, you're welcome.
I can really see how you can use it in every area of your life. And for me, I believe that wealth is so much more than money. So
yes. If
your other areas of your life aren't in sync with what you're trying to build financially, then there are going to be issues. There's going to be a disturbance in the energy, or as you've said, the nervous system.
Yes.
And we hear a lot about people getting ill or having, you know, serious ailments, and you kind of get surprised, like, how has that happened?
Yeah.
But actually, these stressful situations that we find ourselves in, as you've said, impact the body, they impact the mind, and could be a contributor to some of the issues that people are having health-wise.
I agree. There's this technique called the Feng Shui Bagua. And basically what it does, it puts health in the center of all things.
Right.
And then you've got finances, you've got relationships, you've got your goals, your passions, you've got whatever else might be showing up for you. But it's that health.
Yeah.
It's important. It's in the center. It's key to every single thing. So yes, whilst we are having the conversation about, you know, building wealth through love and relationships, we are fundamentally, it's that whole well-being aspect. We have to ensure as much as possible that we are taking care of our health, because that is going to spill over into our wealth.
100%.
They say health is wealth.
Indeed.
You know, that's that saying. Yes. Many people probably have heard that health is wealth. Mm-hmm. So fundamentally, it's the health that will bring about their wealth that you are striving for. So I would really strongly invite people. And of course, we can be blindsided when it comes to our health. We know that. We can make very proactive steps, so rather than just being reactive. No, we can be very proactive too, in the way that we are taking care of our well-being and our health. And again, it's an invitation to people to be able to show up well, so that you can then have, you know, quality relationships, hopefully have a quality financial situation too, whatever that looks like for you.
Yeah. They definitely go hand in hand.
Yeah.
You know, I talk to people who have got all these grand plans that they want to do and so are trying to build their wealth or have X amount in the bank account so they can go on these amazing holidays.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're not looking after their body. They're not looking after their nervous system.
Yeah.
And so by the time you get to the financial goal, your health will probably let you down and you won't be able to experience those things you've been working towards.
Such a great point. Such a great point. In order to experience what you've been working towards, it's the health behind it as well. One thing to achieve a goal, but if you're not able to enjoy it, then does that make the goal feel fulfilling?
Exactly. And then that's a knock-on effect on the mental well-being, etc. So it's definitely about looking at everything in a holistic way.
Yes.
So How do couples or people in a relationship know that they are now doing the right thing, building wealth through love? Mm. People have got different views when it comes to, should we have a joint account or have a separate account?
Yes.
Should we have a combination? You've mentioned money dates. Sometimes it's not practical to have the money date. And so people might feel, oh, we've missed that money date. It's not working.
Yes.
Or one partner will be, okay, I'll put my hand up. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to have a money date, my husband and I. He somehow didn't, he didn't think it was important to do anything. Mm. So I'm now very annoyed.
Yes, yes.
I'm very annoyed. And he's very blasé about the whole thing. However, things are moving in the right direction, mm-hmm. And so how do you at least get to that point where if something like that happens, if there's like a bump in the road, you still have that confidence to course correct? I guess that's what I'm trying to get to.
Yeah. So for example, what you expressed there in terms of being about you missed the money dates, really, again, is about communication. Just because, and it's to have compassion and some grace along the way, because just because it hasn't happened doesn't mean that there's no commitment whatsoever. If you start to notice a pattern such that the person isn't showing up regularly to your dates, and then you can maybe call it out. As long as that person can communicate with you why it happened, or it might be a genuine mistake. Oh my gosh, I missed the money date. No, I'm so sorry about that. Perhaps it's an opportunity to reschedule it at a different time, or to have an impromptu money date. But no, just like that's a sound, have a little bit of a conversation. How are things moving with our money in this situation? Do things need to change? Do we need to actually look at some different types of goals? Are we still even aligned with the goals that we had set in the first place? Do we still want to buy that house, or do we still want to invest in this portfolio, whatever that might be? I think the key thing is to have a money vision. Like when I'm talking to my clients about their relationships, I encourage them, invite them to have a love vision. Now, what is your love vision? And for them to feel into that experience, and how would it make you feel? What will you be seeing on a daily basis? When you wake up first thing in the morning, what are you going to be doing? So if couples can have either like a joint mission statement, sounds very formal, a joint mission statement or a joint money vision, and then tap into that, because there needs to be some drives and some motivation. There'll be days when we don't feel like doing things.
Oh yeah.
Oh, of course, we're human. There'll be days when we just don't have the motivation or the commitment to certain things. And we get that. And we just have to say, I'm just not having one of those days.
Yeah.
It's fine. However, if you can tap in, even on those days, even if you can tap into what your love vision is, maybe even also your wealth vision or your money vision, you can even just type it out. You can have it posted somewhere, very prominently in your home. Frame it. Mm-hmm. What's our mission? Frame it, make it something to celebrate. So therefore you can stay aligned and you can be tapped in with that love. Many of my clients, what they do is that they would record it as an audio. So for me, I've got many of my visions. I've got my well vision, and I've recorded it as an audio. Mm-hmm. So basically what I do is in the morning, as part of my habits and sort of my practices, I will listen to it. So it goes into my unconscious mind. Right. Subconsciously, it's sinking in.
Yeah.
So basically it's just part of who I am now. So perhaps you can, and also some of my clients will have a little bit of a music, a jingle behind it. So it sounds like something to listen to.
Yes.
So get creative with it. If it starts to feel like effort, and we have to be mindful, it takes work. Relationships take work. Looking at your finances, it does take work. Mm-hmm. However, if you can make it feel like something that is really enjoyable, do it. So get your love vision, get your mission statement, maybe record it as an audio, whatever that looks like. So it's just there with you, so you can still feel connected to the love. You might even say it to each other. You might even say it to each other, like a little bit of a mantra.
Yes.
Maybe create a mantra as well. It's not just about the money. It's about how we're building life together as a team. Maybe a little mantra. Say the first thing to each other in the morning. Or before you go to bed. It's not just about the money. It's what the money brings for us as a couple. We're building wealth as a couple. Go us.
I love that.
Go to sleep.
Those are a few things perhaps that can keep you connected. Amazing.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much. You've shared so much of your personal story, techniques that we can use, tips that couples can use as well, to practical tips that couples can use to really start building a strong foundation, not just when it comes to wealth, but every area of their life. And that's what I love about the work you do. It's not just about one specific area. It covers everything that makes us who we are.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been such a wonderful, you know, conversation here. It's been delightful. You've held a space for me to be able to share very openly, and it's been enjoyable too. So thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome. I have a tradition on the podcast. I ask every guest the same question, which is, what is the one wealth conversation you would encourage people to have?
Oh, yeah. I really wish that people would have more intentional conversations in the early stages of a relationship. I feel that we start to broach these topics far too late down the line, and then things start to unravel and it makes us feel uncomfortable, and it can cause some conflicts and some tension. So I really wish that they would have wealth, or we would have wealth conversations at the early stages, even in the dating stage, to be able to understand more about compatibility and how you can potentially work together going forward. So that would be, I guess, my one wish.
That's fantastic, and a very good piece of advice, and a very good conversation for people to have.
Thank you.
It definitely will clear the path for a solid financial foundation and a solid foundation for the relationship.
Yeah, because it also gives you the empowerment to be able to mitigate future discussions too. So it's just like normalizing the conversations from a very early stage.
Indeed, indeed. Thank you so much for that, Tarisha.
Thank you.
How can people get in touch with you if they want to work with you in terms of their relationship, or even, you know, building wealth through love? How can they get in touch with you?
Thank you for asking. So I am Tarisha, and it is spelled T-E-R-E-S-H-A. My surname's Young. And in actual fact, you can find me as Tarisha Young everywhere. I'm omnipresent. So you can find me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. I have a YouTube channel, all as Tarisha Young. You can email me at letsconnect@tarishayoung.com. And also I have a website, which is www.tarishayoung.com.
Fantastic. The links will be in the show notes. You've made it very easy for people to find you.
Yeah, I'm trying to do like an Oprah. Just be Oprah everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Maybe I should change the name of the podcast. Thank you so much, Tarisha. This has been an amazing discussion. And I feel like you will be coming back for more discussions, because as always with most of my podcast guests, I only managed to just scratch the surface.
Yes.
So continue what you're doing.
Thank you.
Continue helping people build strong relationships with themselves and with their significant others. And I look forward to inviting you back onto the Wealth Conversation.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I can't wait to come back. Remember, since you said that,
you will be back.
I will be back. Yeah. Just like how Arnold Schwarzenegger said, I'll be back. So thanks for having me. It's been an honor and a privilege again. Thank you.
You're welcome.